Hello and welcome to the Journey to a Dream podcast brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. This podcast is also supported by the Andreas Racing Association. We're very grateful to Lee Bartram, who helps organise the guests. So thank you very much indeed. And today we're talking to somebody actually who has very close links with the ARA and has done some great things in a relatively short amount of time that he's been road racing. Let's meet him now.
My name's Jamie Kringle, 27 years old. I started racing at the TT in 2023. It was meant to be 2020, but COVID obviously stopped that. And last year, in 24, I made my debut on a big bike for the first year.
Well, let's just head back to little Jamie. And I think, what was it, about five you started out on motocross?
Yeah, so I started motocross when I was 5 years old. You're not actually allowed to race until you're six, so until I was six I was on a day license before that, and a bit of lying about the age, how old I was. But yeah,
was racing then something that's always been in the family that you've grown up with? Because obviously your brother races as well.
Yeah, it's always been in the family. My dad used to race. He pretty much raced anything he could when he was doing it. Four wheels, two wheels, just whatever.
And what was his reaction when you said you wanted to follow in his footsteps and take it more seriously?
Well, I didn't actually start short circuit racing till 2017, which is absolutely fine about. He loves the road racing. But then when I was saying I was going to go to TT in 2020, he wasn't really best impressed probably to start off with, but I guess I was old enough to make my own decisions and he had no choice but to support it really. And yeah,
it must be so hard from a parent's point of view, especially somebody like him who's so passionate about bikes. And we'll talk more about the support that he gives to you a little bit later. But, you know, there's part of him, obviously, that wants his boys to do really well and go out and do what he loves. But then there's always that concern.
Yeah, it's not nice watching someone head off down Brayhill. It's not a nice feeling. I got a taste of my own medicine when Ryan went out in 2023, 24, when he was a newcomer. And when he left, I could feel how he was feeling when I did it. But I was then, say, 20 minutes followed after that. I was then off down the hill doing my thing down there.
And what's the relationship like between you and Ryan? That sort of, is there a friendly rivalry or how does it work?
Yeah, no, it's good. We know our places. We know we can come back and pretty much any track we go to when it comes to road racing, we can relay what we're doing in certain sectors, say, and markers and gears, what we're in, so we can use each other quite well to understand more about the track you're on and learn more to be able to obviously go faster. So obviously I'd say it's probably helped me a lot. I've probably helped him along the way. I wouldn't say loads, but I'd say I've helped him a bit.
And it's nice, I guess, to have somebody who's so close to you that really truly understands what you're going through.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
Was it always the dream then? Was TT always on the radar, even when you first started out in that first motocross?
Probably wouldn't say TT was on my mind, obviously, back as how young I was. But then when I started getting a bit older, obviously my dad sponsored Paul Hunt for many years at the TT and Northwest and stuff like that, so I was always around the paddock, but I was just that little boy racing around in his BMX and coming back to the van to fix it to be able to go back out on my push bike again. So I've always like been around the paddock. When I was young, I probably never really thought I'd be doing TT. I'd probably 2015-ish I started showing a bit of interest, wanting to do a bit of short circuit. I did a couple of track days, not many, and then 2017 I went and got my licence, and then everything's happened from then on in.
And the reality is though, Jamie, is that you're doing all of that while still trying to live a normal, in inverted commas, life as well, and working. And how do you balance it all?
Yeah, it's hard. Like 2020 I swapped my job role. I was a grounds worker, I've become an apprentice plumber, and then I've worked a lot, obviously being quite old going into the trade. I did quite a lot of hours to gain a lot of experience, and then April 24 last year I actually started my own business, and it's just getting harder and harder to be able to do racing work because there's so much money involved to be able to go race a bike now, so you have to do so many hours to be able to say afford it, but it's still very hard to be able to go and do that.
And I guess the only benefit really for working for yourself is that you can dictate your hours a little bit more.
Yeah, you can dictate what your can and can't do in a day, and it's hard to balance jobs and in between everything. But on Sunday we're off to Northwest. I'm off for a week, and once I go on Sunday, I'm not back till the following Sunday, so nothing happens basically then.
Well, it was one of the first questions when you first arrived here at Douglas Head. I sort of said, are you all set for going away for the Northwest? And you said no, which worries me slightly, Jamie. I mean, give us a sense of what the next few days are going to be like for you.
A lot of work to get through before we go to start off with. I haven't sorted anything on my side, but I'm lucky enough, I'm riding for Parker Transport. I'm just going there on a 600, so I'm only doing the super sport category. Lucky enough, them boys have got the bike and all that prep, so basically I just need to bring myself and all my gear and stuff like that. So that takes a lot of pressure off from my side of things.
And in terms of how long you've got to sort of acquaint yourself with the machine once you get there, how does that side of it all work?
I rode for Jerry last TT, so the last time I actually sat on the bike was Bray Hill. I think the newcomers they go out first on the Wednesday. I think they're first out for a practice session, and then I don't even know how many practice sessions or races I have. I'm just turning up.
And how are you feeling about it all? Has this again been something that's been on the radar for a little while?
Yeah, I've wanted to go Northwest and see if I like it or not. I just haven't had the chance to be able to go, basically. Obviously, I'm fortunate enough to have a chance this year, see if I like it. Just going with one bike, not to complicate everything. Just go there, learn, and just see how we get on.
Now, when we talk to people on this podcast about them preparing for the mountain course, I very often talk about watching a lot of onboard laps and whatever. How do you prepare for a new race circuit?
Pretty much the same, to be honest. I went over in February. I did a newcomer, I think it was 2 days, with other, I think there's another 12 other newcomers there for the 2 days. So we did a 2 day course as such, and then basically it's just the case of driving around, watching onboards, and then the rest is up to you basically when you get on the bike.
And it's just one of those things, isn't it? I guess you don't know what to expect, as many onboards as you watch, until you actually get there and you're sat on that start line.
Yeah, exactly. You can't learn it properly until you start riding it. Like, I found that out obviously around TT. You can watch as many onboards, you can think you know where you're going, which I did know where I was going, but everything changes at speed. And yeah, there's just a lot changes compared to what you learn.
And what was the biggest surprise for you at TT, would you say?
I'd say I struggled a little bit from Ginger Hall to Ramsey, that sort of section. I knew it, but I don't think I knew it well enough. But I knew exactly where the track was, but where the position of the road and stuff like that was quite difficult to learn, because it's so bumpy around there in that section. Trying to learn a line where's the smoothest as such is quite hard.
Now, you have had some great success with the Andreas Racing Association. What does racing at Jerby mean to you personally?
It means a lot. Pretty much all I've done since I've started racing, to be honest. I was lucky enough in 2019 I went and did 6 of the 8 rounds of No Limits, which is probably the championship below BSB, although I missed 2 rounds. I think I still finished 5th or 6th in the Super Series 600 championship, so we had quite a good run when we went away. But it's just fun, so it's just hard to be able to go away and ride. And if we didn't have Jerby, I don't know whether I'd actually be sat on the start line at TT, because it's just so expensive to be able to go away and get signatures.
And that's an incredible thing, to have that here on the Isle of Man. You won the ACU Open Solo Centre Championship, I think that was 2021.
Yes.
I mean, that must have been a huge moment. And I guess the question is then, what made everything so special and work so well at that point, do you think?
Put quite a lot into 2021. Did a lot more testing up there as such. We were back and forward. We hired the track quite a few times. We changed the bike a lot. And we just put a lot of effort in to be able to try and win it. And obviously I was fortunate enough to be able to do that.
And you're still an integral part of the racing up there with the ARA. And I think they're so proud of you and Ryan. So to have that sort of support, it is almost like another family, I guess.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a good community up there. Everyone's friendly. Everyone gets on. And if anyone ever needs anything, they'll either come knocking or you go knocking if you need something off them. So it's nice to be able to have that.
Now, you touched on the fact that this is such an expensive sport to be part of. And I'm not sure, but I wonder if you're just like some of the other people that we've spoken to who find it quite difficult to go out and ask for money for something that you actually really love and enjoy. How do you find that side of it?
it's difficult. It's like you're selling yourself for your own sport at the end of the day, aren't you? And it's hard to drag people in who don't really personally know you. Who's personally knows you, they'll do it to like help you out, to try and keep obviously the ball rolling for you. But trying to drag new people in who don't know, I don't think the public realise how much it actually is to be able to go to TT and run the bikes at TT. It's a substantial amount of money and it is hard.
This is something that your dad does help with. How does that all work, the sponsorship side of things?
Yeah, so my dad supplies me the bike, the 1000cc last year at TT. That's the one I've been riding at Derby as well. He brings Andy up. Andy spanners the bike for us, which is AGR Motorsport. Andy always does a good job. He's looked after me since day one, since I started racing, so I trust him, and that's probably the most important thing about being able to trust someone who's working on your bike.
And that has got to be the fundamental thing, isn't it? Because you need to know that when you put your leg over that machine, it's going to work exactly as you need it to.
Yeah, exactly. It needs to be 110%.
And that's one side of it, the machinery, but the sort of the mental preparation for racing, particularly something like the mountain course, how have you found that?
I'm quite easygoing, to be honest. I don't let anything bother me. I don't even let anything bother me until after I set off down Brayhill, and then I'm in my own zone then and free and doing my own thing. Quite chilled out about it, and people will probably say the same, how laid back I am. I don't really let much get to me.
Where does that come from?
I don't actually know, to be honest. I don't know. Just not a clue.
Oh, do you know what? If you could bottle that, you could pay for your TTs for the next 10 years. In terms of then having your dad supporting you like that, I mean, obviously that emotional side of things is one thing, but I mean, that must be great. Presumably he supports Ryan as well.
Yeah, he supports Ryan as well. He's invested a massive amount of money to be able to get us to the point to where we are today. We were both generally wouldn't be there without it, that's for sure. And we probably wouldn't be at TT either.
How much time do you spend thinking about things other than bikes?
Not a lot, to be honest.
What about, is it Parker Transport Racing? So that's the other team. Tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, so they're based in Ireland. They're from Ballycastle is where they're based. Jerry, who owns Bike, he owns a transport company, and that's obviously the main sponsor for the team. He got in touch with Ryan just before 2024 and asked Ryan to ride a bike. And then he started talking about buying another bike. So then once he started saying stuff about that, Ryan put my name forward. And then fast forward to 2024, we both ended up on the same umbrella, which is great because we're under our own umbrella for the thousands and then under Jerry with the 600. So it's all like in-house. It's only, you're only going between ourselves and Jerry, so you're not dancing around the paddock trying to keep everyone else happy around you. Jerry's a great fella. Yeah, he's very nice.
Oh, that's brilliant. And you were talking about the fact that 2020 was supposed to be the year for TT for you initially, but obviously we know with the whole COVID and what happened with that. I just wonder how you dealt with that disappointment.
Parked it, to be honest. Yeah, it's just is what it is at the end of the day. If you can't, no one else is doing it. It would have been a bit worse, say, if I come prior to the event and injured myself and I was watching everyone else race around, but that wasn't the case. No one was able to do it, and it didn't really bother me too much. Obviously, I was eager to get going, but it's just one of those things. Obviously, it was out of everybody's hands, and it just didn't happen.
Speaking of injury, there was an incident a couple of years ago, just before TT. You did have a crash and you had quite a few injuries, but you still competed in the TT. And again, I think people just wonder, where do you get that mental strength from to overcome what must have been quite a lot of pain to still go out there and do it?
Yeah, so me and Ryan went away with some other friends from the Arman motocross and basically racing. It was Easter weekend and we both come away from that event hurt. I basically had a big crash, and as I was cartwheeling, the bike landed on top of me. And ever since then, still to this day, the bottom side of the left of my back is still numb from that crash. The end of last year, I went to the last British Supermoto round. I just bought a bike and just thought I'd go for a play. I ended up coming off. I crashed at Wigan Three Sisters, and I broke my ankle in two places, broke my fibula on my leg as well. So I've been set back over the winter period. I was off a motocross bike for 3.5 months. My leg's fine, my ankle's still not right, but I can still ride a bike, and I'm pain-free riding a bike, but every footstep I can still feel my ankle. It's still not 100%, but it is what it is. You just got to get on with it. So I've been back on a motocross bike now for like 2 months. So I've been trying to get out quite a lot, because prior to that, I sat 3.5 months. I was still moving about. I had a day off work, and then I was straight back to work the next day. Thanks to Marcus Simpson, he was driving me about and lifting my tools, and I was doing the work. So I only had a day off in between doing it, but I was on crutches for 6 weeks. I had a cast on. They didn't find out I had a break in my fibula until 2 weeks later, until a follow-up at a hospital. So I went up there and I said, I'm having really bad pains up my leg and I don't know what it is. Basically, I went for another x-ray and they said, yeah, your fibula's broke. So I went from an air boot to a cast, which I was gutted because I was still driving at the time. Yeah, so that Marcus was in for a bit longer than I expected.
That's what friends are for, isn't it? But again, I think, do you know, Jamie, for people who aren't involved in this sport, I think this must be one of the hardest things to understand. It's like, you know, you go out there, you ride, you hurt yourself pretty badly, but yet your first thought is, how long is it going to be before I can get back on the bike again?
Yeah, literally. It was as soon as I'd done it, obviously, I didn't think I'd be as bad as what I was. I thought, 6 weeks and I'll be back on a bike. Like, that's normally when I hurt myself, I'm normally quite eager to get straight back on to keep on top of my fitness. But I just knew I couldn't do it, and I didn't want to set myself back more and more. So it's quite hard not being able to do anything for a while. So the past couple of months I've been getting out quite a lot.
I mean, that fitness side of things is crucially important. Again, it's like an upside that maybe the public don't necessarily see or understand. So how did you manage your fitness when really all you could do was go around on your crutches?
Literally crutch to work. I was crutching everywhere, basically. That's all I could do. Like, still now, I can't run or anything because my ankle won't take it. My main training is basically my motocross bike and supermoto. So I've been trying to aim to get out my motocross bike at least twice a week, and then we've been up Derby majority of Wednesday night, so that's the only way I can train. Although I think that is the best way to be able to train, is ride a bike, especially a motocross bike, because of how physical it is. Kart tracks is very physical, and supermoto as well, which is good. So it's all good prep before TT.
And we were just looking out the window here on Douglas Head and admiring the weather today, and you did say, well, maybe I'll get on the motocross. Is that still where your heart is, would you say?
It's always something I'll fall back to, definitely. It's a lot more affordable, so we've come to a stage where enough's enough, and with spending as much as I do on road racing and to be able to do TT and stuff like that, yeah, I don't think I'll ever stop motocross because it's a lot more affordable than road racing.
Well, speaking of the road racing then, I mean, TT, you are still a relative newcomer. It's only been a couple of years, but already you've made massive leaps. So last year, breaking into the top 20, you did an average speed of over 123 miles an hour. What's the ultimate goal?
I'm quite realistic. As long as I go back this year and improve on what I did last year, I think I did 125.3 in the big bike race every lap, obviously apart from a pit stop laps. So as long as I go back and go a little bit faster, I'm happy. I'm not looking to make massive strides because I'm not that type of person. I'll take it in slow. I'm probably a little bit of a slower learner than everyone else, so I know where I can get to in the end, but I'm happy with taking my time, being able to get there slowly.
Now, we talked a little bit about Derby, and one of the things that you are key at there as well is the mentorship and passing on knowledge, particularly to the younger riders. Why is that so important to you?
Just like to help out the younger generation, especially when I started. Obviously, everything was new to me. Like, I didn't understand how a bike worked. Trying to get someone else to understand how a bike works, how you need to get it set up, explain the gear to them up there and what gear they need to be in, and little markers, what they can look out for braking and stuff like that. I think it's crucial to be able to bring people through and show interest elsewhere.
Who was your best mentor, would you say?
I'd say Ryan, my brother, to be honest, because he was there, I don't even know when he started up there, maybe 2013 or 14, somewhere around there. So he'd done quite a lot of laps before I even started up there.
Is he the oldest?
Yeah, he's the oldest, yeah.
You talked about the fact, obviously, you were dealing with injury over the winter, and, I mean, it's a long winter anyway for lots of people in your position who just want to be out there racing. You say you're quite chilled out and laid back, which is definitely something you get the impression of speaking to you just now. But how do you deal with it when you can't get out on the bike? I mean, are you a bit grumpy to be around?
No, I wouldn't say so. I just know I'd say I've probably hurt myself that many times. I know how to deal with it now. It's not nice being laid up and not being able to do anything, but at the end of the day, I've hurt myself doing something what I was probably training to do towards for the next year, so it just is what it is.
What's your proudest moment racing so far?
Probably I'd say in the two superbike races in 24, I was 18th from both of them. I was about 15th, I think, in the superstock race, but unfortunately I ran out of fuel at Hillbury on the last lap, so I didn't actually make it home then.
Oh God, that must have been, I mean, you're laid back, but even you must have just thought, oh dear.
Yeah, I was a little bit angry at that one, but there's no point going back screaming and shouting at anyone because it just doesn't achieve anything, does it?
And what's great, I'm guessing, is when you are going round and you see all the people out there sitting on the hedges and waving at you, because people really love to support the Manx riders.
Yeah, it's great. You get a lot of local support and just stupid things like people posting videos up when you're going by. But what they don't realise is that when you can watch that back and where you were, say, on the track, you can have a look to see if I need to be a bit to the left, a bit to the right. It's not just, although people don't realise that's what you're looking at when you open your phone and you see a video that someone sent you. You can also analyse what you're doing there, and if you need to change something, you know you can change it there.
It just seems impossible, though, that when you're going at such speed that you can think, I don't know, 2-3 corners ahead and actually think about exactly where you need to be on the road.
Yeah, like you said, you're always 2 corners ahead at least, always thinking about it. It is quite mad when you think about it like that, but I guess that's just how your brain works, and you're already trying to predict something before you've even actually gone through it. Say.
And where is your favourite part of the mountain course then? Not Hillbury, I'm guessing.
Not Hillbury. No, it's quite a bad bump there as well. Quite like the Balacry jump, the left, because the left before it's fast and you get a good jump after it.
And if anybody's listened to this and they're maybe considering setting out on this journey, what would be the best piece of advice you could give them?
Just take your time and don't rush it at all. Once it's meant to be, it'll be, and it will fall into place for you. I wouldn't rush coming here. I'm not saying people do. Just do it in your own time, and when you know it's right, you know it's right and do it.
And, you know, the other part of TT nowadays is there is a lot of press attention and you very often get a microphone shoved in front of your face. How do you cope with that side of things?
Yeah, I've probably got better with it, but I seem to, like get a dry mouth and not really know what to say and swallow myself up inside and think about everything what you're saying before you say it. But it's hard to do that, yeah.
But it is a part of the thing today, isn't it, getting your name out there? I suppose maybe you've got slightly less pressure with that in terms of the responsibility to the sponsors.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
So, as I say, just a few days until the Northwest. We wish you all the very best with that, Jamie. So where are you staying? Do you stay in the paddock or are you staying in the house? Or?
Yeah, so I'm bringing a van over. I'm staying in the van.
That sounds very comfortable. I presume it's got all the stuff in
there. Yeah, it's got
a
bed in it,
yeah.
So
no, that's all right,
it'll
then.
Be all right.
And where can people follow you and check how you're doing?
So I've got a racing page on Facebook. It's just Jamie Kringle Racing. I actually got hacked, just over a year ago, so there might be 2 pages, but there's one, you'll see what's up to date, and then my Instagram's just Jamie Kringle as well. As
wonderful. And if anybody takes any of those videos, then you'll be wanting to see them.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Well, we wish you all the very best with that. Can't wait to hear how you do, and again, all the best for TT as well, which is fast approaching.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for your time,
Jamie Kringle, and all the best for the Northwest 200. Really looking forward to seeing how he does, and of course for TT as well. And just incredible that he's doing all of this while still nursing that ankle injury. So fingers crossed that gets better. The links to where you can follow Jamie are on the podcast page, so do take a look there. And if you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, I'd love to hear from you. BethSB@manxradio.com is the best email address, or just give Lee at the Andreas Racing Association a shout. This podcast is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, and you can find out more about them by visiting kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.